用されるのかな。
So, yuck the culture, Renato.
And yuck the culture to you, Gwen.
I feel like this is Wayne and Garth or something, but no.
Party time.
We're here for party on. Culture on would be the correct term, I think. But yes, that can mean only one thing. We are deculturing on here for another episode.
So when you met the
Macross
floating
Speaker
heads, did you say, we're not worthy, we're not worthy?
Well, that would work in a US context. I mean, the hoary floating head thing doesn't exist in Japan, right?
It doesn't?
It doesn't. That came from an English-speaking user, according to Wiki.
Yeah, but if you remember, I don't know if... going right off the rails before we even introduce the goddamn show. If you remember, in Figure O issue 77 or whatever it was, which was back in 2004, when the...
What was on the cover?
It was actually a picture drawn by Kawamori with markers of the SV-51 fighting the VF-0. It was like one of the best retrospectives of all the toys that Yamato and Bandai had done up to that point. Up to that point meaning 2004, so the best was yet to come. So with each little corner... with each little column that Kawamori wrote for that article, and it was a really big article, there was a little face, a little Kawamori face, which was just his beheaded head. And it was floating there in like, I think it was just black and white or yellow and blue or something. And so when we all saw that on Macross World, everyone was like, hey, it's true! They use the floating head, they're actually doing it. So there you go.
Okay.
And there was one other floating head reference thing. I can't remember it now, but there was one other time when we all... This is what happens in the toy forum. You don't really hang out with us. But we all really went crazy because something just made it fit, like with the floating head. Some head thing happened. I don't know what it was.
Well, I don't even get what that's supposed to mean.
I don't know. I don't remember. I'll remember it eventually. Anyway, it's a thing in Japan. Don't worry. It's just not the thing that we think it is.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So it is October 4th, or it was. I think we've probably talked long enough to go into the next day. It's Sunday here in Tokyo, and I thought I'd give you a call, Renato, and we'd just go over a couple of bits and pieces that have happened recently.
Yeah.
Because unfortunately, you know, we didn't have the chance to get the whole gang together. Everyone's really busy. Preparations for Macross WorldCon are underway.
Well, you are. Well, I'm not busy with that.
I still haven't got my air ticket, which is a problem. Given
also,
that it's
thanks 2 weeks guys time. For organizing the best Macross World convention just when I can't go.
I'm sure it will be great, though. No, it is a very original lineup this year. It's very different in feel from last year, which is a good thing. It means you're not getting the same thing year after year.
Yes.
So what I want to start off with tonight then, Renato, is I wanted to get your thoughts on Delta.
Okay, well, I wasn't at any of the things that you guys were at.
Right.
Well, I was, but I went a day later, fashionably late, of course.
So you did actually go to the hobby show, you just weren't there the previous day when they did the announcements.
Yeah, you guys went on the Saturday, And the Kawamori thing was at 3 p.m., I think. On the Saturday, I finished work at like 2:30, and by the time I would have gotten there, it would have been finished. So
right.
I figured, well, I'll be going there this weekend anyway to go to the tourism expo that they had in the rest of Big Sight, by the way. Because Big Sight is an enormous, enormous convention center. And the Moke, the model show, was really just one
hall.
Which
wasn't Moke, but yeah.
Moke, yeah, it was kind of like a model of a model show. Yeah. It was one hall, whereas the other event, which was the Japan Tourism Expo 2015, took up almost every other hall in the east side. Because
right.
I think you guys were in the west side.
Right, we were.
Or vice versa. And so I thought, okay, well, I'll spend a couple of hours on the tourism thing, and then I'll pop over to the Moké one.
And but so you're at the model show, and you saw all the posters for Delta Up, and of course, I'm sure you saw the picture online.
I went there, I went to the tourism expo, and I went to the Delta Airlines booth, and I saw lots of planes there, and also lots of singers, because they had people dressed up as the Blues Brothers singing Sweet Home Chicago and Shake a Tail Feather or whatever. So there you go. That's my love triangle right there.
And now that you've driven away 80% of the listeners, Renato...
I think I'm bringing them right in. Like, Blues Brothers, hello. So, okay, well, we'll get to the stuff that you want me to get to. I went there, and first of all, the first thing I saw, somehow, like, I was drawn to it, was the new Mega House Orgus, as in the second one, Orgus 2.
I'm not surprised in the slightest.
Olsen. And then next to it was some SDF-1, I don't know. And then, walked around. I mean, everyone's seen the photographs by now, right? So, like, there's no news. Walked around, and I saw these Delta posters everywhere. Then I went over to... what's the name of that company that's bringing out those tiny VF1s? Yeah, right? Oh, nobody knows, right?
The 144 scale?
I think so, yeah. They had a diorama. They had a diorama with the city... Yeah, so
the cannon fodder ones, right?
They had cannon fodders, but they also have the Roy Fokker
in a separate bubble display bubble.
Yeah, that's the one that was going around. So it had it set up in Go Walk Fighter and Batroid, and they were spinning around on this little stand that moves.
Right.
So that was kind of cool, but I was never. I don't want to say I've never been into the kits since, like, at home I've got an entire attic full of unbuilt kits. But I was always kind of iffy on the idea of Macross kits, because Macross Valkyries are supposed to transform, and the kits in general don't transform. There's a few, but, you know, I don't know. I just saw it as a kind of a transformer that doesn't transform is a bit of a waste of time. So
right,
not that I'm, I am very very impressed when people make these really extravagant, luxurious builds. But it's not for me because I'll never be able to do that. So
which are, by your own admission, a waste of time.
Now you're putting words in my mouth that I actually said that were in there that I tried to take out, but you put them right back in. Then I went over to the Takaratomi booth to check out Masterpiece Hot Rod. Does anyone care? No? All right, let's move on. I met Max Watanabe, the head of Max Factory. He's kind of cool.
Oh, okay. So, your thoughts on that Delta picture?
On the picture?
Yeah.
It's a picture. I don't know. It doesn't really tell you much. There's two planes on it. I didn't even know what a Draken was. I mean, I'm sure I've seen one before. When I was younger, but like when I was younger, my favorite planes were the F-15, and sometimes the F-14, I guess. The Draken, I was never really into it too much, so I was like, okay, red plane, blue plane, planes.
So
there's really nothing for me to talk about other than
red versus blue, okay, or are we seeing?
I will say one thing though. Having listened to your podcast.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you listen.
I've been an avid listener. You could say I was more. Well, anyway, so there was a talk about the different engine colors, the thrust colors, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really so interested in the in-world stats or whatever, but I will say that these are probably done to make it. To give it a cool impression when it's on TV, I'm sure Kyle Mori is going to do one of those shots that he loves to do, which is a really wide, wide shot where you only see the trails. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they're like whizzing past each other and going, pew, 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 pew. Like he's done that in Aquario and he's done that in all the Macross series. Well, all the 21st century Macross series, he's done that everywhere. So, and it's not just him, of course, it's a very, very, cool effect to do. That you often see in anime. So I think that's why they're doing it.
I don't disagree with you for a moment, but the fact he's already tried to come up with an in-world explanation.
Oh yeah, but like you said, yeah, I mean it's about fold quartz colors. You know, sometimes it's that, sometimes it's this, and sometimes
exactly. And you know, this will probably tie into what we're going to discuss later on, which is the Henke, the Kawamori exhibit. Not together, but we went to a Mari Ijima concert. It was her 2015 gig in Tokyo, and she does these every year.
Yes,
this was, I think it was September 19 that we went.
Was it that long ago? No. Was it? No, it was this month. No, wait.
It's currently October.
Yeah, it was 19th. It was what, 2 weeks already?
Yeah,
or three. Wow. Can I just say, this show was fantastic, and I'm quite sure you weren't expecting me to say that, right?
I had an inkling. I can't say I entirely agree, but
I really, really enjoyed it. And okay, how do you want to approach this?
Well, let's start off with the setup, because the interesting thing to note here is that neither of us were originally planning to go.
No, that's not true. I was very much on the fence.
Okay. You hadn't gotten over the fence to the point of buying a ticket, though.
No, and I never do. I usually do on-the-day things.
Well, and this time around, there were tickets available on the day, which was not a good sign, to be honest. I went through a period where I went to Mari's stuff every year here. And honestly, after the 30th crossover live, she sounded so amazing there, and it was just such good vocals, such good arrangement, such a good backup. I couldn't go back to her, literally, as they call them here, one man, her solo shows, her one man shows. So I hadn't been to one of her solo gigs in 2 or 3 years. In fact, I think the last time I saw her solo was at Macross WarpCon last year.
So yeah.
And I wasn't really planning on going because these shows, well, it's a bit of a gamble. Sometimes one will have a fair bit of Macross and the other won't, or sometimes neither will have much. One of the ones I went to years ago had 80% Macross, but then,
really?
And there's two sessions, of course. There's a lunchtime concert and an evening concert.
80% Macross?
Yeah.
But there's like about hardly any songs that you can do. Like, Minmay has like 10 songs.
Maximum. But she went for some extended stuff. Like she did, what was it? Why Me?
Oh. No, it's Why. It's not Why Me, because Hikaru didn't choose her. It's Why Not Me.
But, she did that. And she
why did you fall in love with me?
Well, she did everything possible, Macross. And she did a lot. But that was years ago. And this time around, I wasn't planning on going. Until a guy in my office, who I haven't spoken to in years, but I know is a fellow Macross fan, just called me up and said, "Hey, I've got some tickets to Mari. You have them really cheap. I can't go because it's the same weekend as the Tokyo Game Show, and the office has suddenly said you have to work. I have to work all weekend." So I got the tickets on the cheap, and there was one for the lunchtime session or the early afternoon, and one for the evening. So you went to the early afternoon. I went to the evening.
Mm. Yes.
So, okay, well, we've established that you love the gig. Tell me more.
Well, okay, let me tell you the story, right? Because
There's always a story.
I get there. No problem really finding the place. I think it's okay. It's
the Hakuju Hall,
right?
Yeah, she always Shibuya. Does it there.
Well, the last time I actually went to one of her gigs in Tokyo, I wasn't even living in Tokyo yet. It was I had gone up there from Kansai, mm-hmm. and it was in Club Quattro in Shibuya,
mm-hmm.
which is a totally different hall. You know, it's more like, you know, rock bands play there. Mm-hmm. Hakuju Hall is more like a theater stage. You know, so piano recitals are held there.
Mm-hmm. It's small, but.
It's small, but it's about the same size as Club Quattro. So, you know, it hasn't changed. It's just the acoustics are much, much better because they're suited for classical recitals and performances like that. Mm. Whereas the other one is more, you know, it's a rock, it's a kind of a, it's a live house, really.
Right.
Okay. So, first of all, I walk into the foyer and there is nobody there that was born before, that was born after 1970. No, wait, 1965. I felt so out of place. There were maximum two women there when mm-hmm. I entered. Mm-hmm. More came in afterwards. I was maybe half an hour early, 40 minutes maybe. Went in to use the bathroom and I sat down on a chair, and then more people started coming in. But some of them knew each other and they pointed and they were like, "Oh yeah, yeah, how are you doing?" And he's like, "Oh yeah, well, I'm getting the train back after this is done, so I can't see you in the evenings." I'm guessing a lot of people went to both shows.
Often that is the case. Mm-hmm. In the past, she has done a thing where if you go to both shows, then you can get a photo taken with her or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
This time around, I know she had special tickets, which yes. allowed you to see some of the rehearsal.
Exactly, right. So as I said, I walked in just before the half an hour early mark. If you can, yeah, I don't know. You choose a better expression in your mind. And then, so like when the 30 minutes to showtime mark passed, the lady said, "Okay, everyone with a premium ticket, please come in." And you can see her rehearsing, apparently, and talk to her, I guess, maybe. Although, it's not the best thing right. to do when she's rehearsing.
Exactly.
I didn't, obviously I didn't have one of those tickets. I just sat there and looked at everyone else that was sitting there, looking at their mobile phones.
It sounds like you had a very similar experience to me in that when I got there for the evening gig, I got there about, like you, 40 minutes early because I was going to, you know, hang out and talk to the regular Macross guys who I thought would be there.
You texted me and it was like, "Oh my God, there's old people here and no one I know is here." And you sounded like a lost child.
Well, it was true. I looked in there. There's all these grey-haired and bald dudes, and a couple of them seemed to have their wives with them, and I didn't know any of them. And at the last minute, as I was going in, the guy who makes the Macross caps at Wonderfest, recently he did the Macross 7 caps, he turned up.
Okay.
And that was fine. But yeah,
were there any young people there?
No.
Okay, well, there were. No. After a while, there was there were two girls. They didn't come together. Yes. Yeah. It's more than one. It's a plural. One of them, but they didn't come together or anything. They didn't know each other, and they didn't speak to each other or anything like that. One of them was, they were clearly both quite Fujoshi-like, okay, but in their own ways. It was actually quite fascinating.
You realize you are now going to have to explain what a Fujoshi is.
Oh, because Macross fans really are not with it these days. Okay, you know, in recent... How do I start? Fujoshi are basically the female equivalent of the otaku. But, you know, they've been around for long.
If you take the most negative kind of Japanese stereotype of otaku.
Yeah.
Well, you know, because otaku was originally a form of group address of association, and it later kind of got its negative connotations, whereas Fujoshi has been negative from the beginning.
That's true. Fujoshi is inherently negative. It literally means, like,
rotten woman.
Rotting girl, right? Rotting woman.
Yeah.
That's not really a proud badge of honor that you should have.
But often an apt description. But
oh, my God. These girls were okay, I think. I don't know.
Okay.
One of them was wearing this. She had this bag, which had stars and like space and galaxy kind of motifs on it, and she took out some drink, and it had a container that had some boys' love characters on it. You know, clear, and she had a K-Books bag from Akihabara. really, really not trying to hide the fact at all.
Right.
We're in Fujoshi world.
I just say...
So I was just wondering, how does she know Mari Ijima? Well, obviously, you know, she's done her homework on Macross, I guess. And that's really the only way. The other girl was... Now, this is, like, pretty crazy territory. Dressed head to toe in like bright purple and kind of pastel-y colors, and her shirt was like full of the characters from Creamy Mammy.
Okay.
So the little cat there and Creamy Mammy face, and the logo of the show everywhere. She was wearing these weird puffy shorts that these girls are into now. Well, these type of girls are into. You know what I mean? Like, the shorts that go way, way up high, like, to the top of the thigh, but then they puff out.
Okay.
At the top. And then she's got these purple tights.
Your obsession with female fashion aside...
It's not an obsession. Do you not think that stands out in general, in particular from that crowd? That crowd!
Especially in that crowd, I will agree. And this is my takeaway from this, because I think we need to get to the music in a moment. But the last time I went to see Mari, which was before the 30th anniversary, we were still very much, I think, in the middle of all boats being lifted by the tide phase of the frontier popularity. And those tickets were sold out. There were no on-the-day tickets. And there was more Macross fans I knew of. There were more younger people there.
Mm.
Whereas this time around, I think we'd gotten to the point where now the ships have subsided slightly, and we're back to her old school fans who aren't even necessarily Macross fans. They're Mari fans from day one. Maybe you know, the original Idol fans in a way.
Yeah.
But and even the way they acted during the gig was different. Like, they were all getting up and completely rocking out to her in the last three or four songs.
Oh, really?
Like, completely cheering, completely...
Oh, in the last three or four songs, yeah, but that's because she told them to.
For me, they were starting to get up towards the end anyway.
Okay.
And these were all people, like, in their 40s and 50s, and they're all calling out, telling her she's cute, and acting shy and
stuff.
In
your show, did you have the one guy at the back going, Mari-chan, kawaii!
Yes.
You know, like in the 80s?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yep.
Probably the same guy. Yeah, those guys still think it's the 80s, and that's okay, right? I think that's fine.
We'll be right back.
was surprised because it was the first time I'd encountered this fandom.
Really?
So, all right, let's put the graying army aside for a second, and
then we walk in, and then we're outside the lobby of the place now, of the hall,
mm-hmm.
and there's a Mikimoto illustration. Oh no, not the illustration. The illustration comes later, I think. There's a bunch of flowers from Mikimoto. There's a bunch of flowers from what's that thing called? Shower Music Shower Japan, Music Shower Tokyo, or something like that.
Okay.
There's a flower bouquet from Flying Dog, Shiro Sasaki, whom I met. Okay. He was there as well. So yeah, I bumped into him. Yes, and I almost said thank you for Macross 2, but obviously, you know, time and a place, man. That was not the time or the place. I love how that's a non sequitur for you.
Yeah, no. So, but that illustration was there when I was there as well, and it was a recent Mikimoto piece of Minmay, and
yeah, no, but
it was obviously trying
it
to draw the face as Mari.
I don't know about that. I think you're looking way too deep into it. It's not. It wasn't that to me.
It was very much a style which I thought looked like he was trying to channel Mari into the character. But
it could be. I don't know. I didn't see it. But
either way, it was a great piece.
Yeah, it's okay.
Okay. Mikimoto original drawn for the day in the lobby. Anyone can just pick it up and walk out with it.
I know.
And it's okay. All right. Don't you realize that one illustration probably set Macross the First back another month? But, all right, come on now, music.
It literally did, didn't it? Didn't they just announce that it's going to be even?
They just, well, they never announce it. Macross the First, they just shift the schedule, and he keeps getting knocked back to the 23rd of the following month, and then the following month, with no explanation.
Okay.
So, yeah, music.
Well, let me bring out the
The set list.
The set list, because I walked in, I didn't know what to expect. For the record, last time I saw her live was also at Macross World convention, mm-hmm. and that place is not rigged to handle concerts. They were using the same PA mics. Like, even she was complaining about it, you know?
Yeah.
I think everyone enjoyed the performance, but I mean, sound-wise, there was a lot to. The first song was Tightrope. And I meant to re-listen to these songs again, just so I know which ones we're talking about, because I know the titles of some of them, and I know most of the songs, but I don't know all the titles of all the songs. You know what I mean? So Tightrope, mm-hmm. I've got the Midori album, I was actually listening to it again this week, but I'm sorry, shoot me. I don't know which of those songs is Tightrope, and I don't remember what her opening song was. It opened, and I thought, okay, well, this is fine. Yeah, this is Mari. You know, she's at the piano playing. Mm-hmm. There's a grand piano on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I'll tell you what was really funny is that she walks on, you know, a giant applause, and she sits down at the piano. And the first thing she says is, okay, that thing there, move it. I can't see. And she's pointing to the stand that has the music sheets on it, because it's blocking her view of the audience, because it's right in front of the piano. It's in the middle of the stage. So some guy goes over and takes it. And so throughout the rest of the concert, as she's switching from BGM tracks and actual just acoustic piano tracks, sometimes she sits at the front of the stage and sometimes she sits at the piano, and mm-hmm. so the guy has to come on and put the stand there and then take it off and then put it back on. So that was a bit disruptive, but I think it's just funny that her first words were not like, you know, she didn't break into song immediately or mm-hmm. say, welcome to my show. It's just like, that thing, what did I say? But she did it in her own, like, charming way that, so that nobody thought that she was being annoying, I think.
Well, I think she'd won the crowd over the last 33 years.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, these were... No one here was for... Actually, can I talk about one thing that happened after the concert?
Well, since we don't seem to be getting into the music,
okay. Before, because I was going to say, I don't think there was anyone here seeing her for the first time. That's not true. There was one young guy, except he didn't look so young. I thought I was younger than him, but the way he spoke and the way and his mannerisms, he's probably late 20s. Afterwards, when we were all lining up for signatures,
wait, you got signatures?
Yeah, I showed you on. Well, okay. I showed you and a bunch of other people on Macross World, not Macross, whatever that is, the Macross group on Facebook.
I don't think we got signatures, but anyway, okay.
You had to buy stuff. Did you buy anything?
Maybe they did it before the concert. Actually, there was a line. Yeah, okay, it was probably a merch.
Anyway, I lined up, and there were a bunch of guys behind me, and they were all chatting away, and they were talking. It sounded to me, you know, I'm just shamelessly eavesdropping. It sounded like to me like there were three guys who often go to concerts once a year, and one guy who was brand new, and they were treating him like the kohai, like, oh, you newbie, you know, what is a young guy like you doing in a place like this? How do you find out about Mary Easyman, for God's sakes? And he's like, oh, yeah, you know... It was just the first time I've seen her. I didn't even know about her. I mean, I've heard people talk about her, but I never had a chance to check her out. And they're like, oh, well, I guess, how did you, Macross, right? You learn about her because of Macross. And he was like adamant that it was, no, it wasn't Macross. It was like they were accusing him of something, and he was trying to fight for his own independent music taste. And he was like, no, it wasn't Macross. It was because of Yellow Magic Orchestra.
Really? And because of YMO?
Well, let me explain. The first Mary Ejima album, called Rosé, was all engineered and... well, I don't know about engineered, actually. It was arranged and produced by Yuichi Sakamoto.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not sure how common knowledge that is, but that's true. And he was chosen by Mary Ejima. You know, it wasn't like the record company thought it would be a cool thing. I mean, they obviously, you know, did afterwards, but Mary Ejima had a lot of creative control, even from the very, very beginning. And so she was like, okay, I want Ryuichi Sakamoto to produce my album, please. And so, you know, this guy, this fan here that was behind me, he wanted to check out all this stuff that people had talked about in Mary Ejima, and he said, you know, yeah, a few years ago, Tower Records was doing... Victor was re-releasing the first batch of Mary Ejima albums on CD, but they were all in the kamijake, which is like the reproduction
sleeves, right?
Yeah, reproduction LP sleeves.
Mm-hmm.
And they released like almost a whole back catalog. And when he found out about that, or by the time he found out about that, rather, they were all sold out. So he never got a chance to listen to it. And then he decided to go one day to Tower Records. This was just a couple of years ago, or last year, or something. And he finally found some in stock. Mm. And he sat down and listened to the first couple of albums, and was like, "What is this? This is amazing. I've never heard anything like this before." And the other three Mary fans were like, yeah, yeah, it's something, isn't it? And I don't know. It's such a small kind of minor moment, I guess. But it was such a touching moment, I think. You know? Because they're basically re-experiencing their own first time with Mary. Like, through this guy. I thought it was kind of cool.
Yeah, no, that is really neat.
Those, for the record... If you hadn't listened to at least the first four albums, and you're listening to this, stop, press pause, and order them from Amazon or whatever. Just listen to them. They're absolutely fantastic. Gwyn, I don't know where you stand on these ones, but the first album is called Rose, the second album is called Blanche, the third album is called Midori, and the fourth album is called Kimono Stereo. And they're really, really good. They're all really, really, like, concept albums.
I don't think I'm as familiar with them all as you are.
I'll bring them over next time we do another speaker podcast.
I do have two or three of her earlier, you know, post-Macross albums, and I do think that, and I've said this on the podcast before, the first one or two albums post-Macross almost sound like the Lost Minmay B-sides, just because her voice still has a similar, like, it's not being produced the same, but it has a similar sound to it.
Yeah,
And then it gets more experimental and interesting.
I don't know. I had the same reaction that this guy did the first time I heard Rosé, which is her debut album, right? Because I knew those Minmay songs. Mm-hmm. I had also listened to some more recent Mari Ijima's songs, so I knew that. But when you listen to that first album, you're like, what is this? Kind of electronic, kind of ethereal, weird stuff that is kind of like pop, but kind of like YMO in some senses, and also reminds me a lot, and you're gonna laugh at this, of the Twin Bee soundtrack by Konami.
Oh my, wow.
Yeah, okay. Like, it was so weird, but it's really, really cool.
So
check I all that to, stuff I out. To, Maybe we should talk to, about the concert, is what you want
to
say. Now,
yeah,
right?
I hate to break in, but
I told
we should probably mention the music, which is why we were there.
Okay, well, 1 hour in, we'll finally get into
it. Do you want me to give you my short version?
Sorry?
I'll give you my short version.
All right.
For the evening, at least. And yes. Then you can revisit the afternoon. But,
okay.
I mean, basically, we got, two Macross songs, I think?
You got three, I got two.
That's right. What did I get?
You got Cinderella, which is extra. I didn't get that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And, of course, Tenshi no Ue no Gu and Do You Remember Love? So Angel's Paints and Do You Remember Love? And that was around the time she did No Limit before that. No Limit is where she normally gets people up and jumping. And that's where everyone was on their feet. And I was just like, wow, this... Okay, I haven't seen a crowd jumping in a Mari gig, solo gig, like, ever. So it was a kind of a new experience. And her versions of Angel Paints and Do You Remember Love were fine. You know, I enjoyed them. They were all right. As for some of her other stuff that she did, I was familiar with some of it. Like, I knew Cinderella.
Yeah, of course.
I knew that You Don't Love Me. And
Cinderella is probably not such a famous song, so let me just explain to all the Macross fans here. Cinderella is the one that she sings in Do You Remember Love when she's captured, and it's being played during the montage of Hikaru and Misa wandering the earth.
That one.
Yeah,
that one. Yes. That very one.
Oh,
I was very relieved she didn't do Broken Computer.
I'll be very surprised.
I won't repeat the lyrics for, because I'd have to censor the podcast.
Yes.
But, yeah. No, overall, it was a good set, which...
She opened with that, though, last time I saw her.
I think she opened it for me, too. She was going through a breakup, I think. And that's a breakup song. So, yeah, no, there was a lot more of her earlier stuff than I was expecting, to be honest, overall. And that was fine. I would have liked a bit more Macross. But it was a fine gig. I just... I hadn't intended to go. I got this ticket.
Yeah.
It was just really... I almost found everything surrounding the concert, the fans, the different fandom, the Mickey Moto art, to be, at the very least, as interesting as the gig itself.
Mm-hmm.
I was just kind of trying to chill on the chair. Like,
yeah.
I bought a drink, just not that you're supposed to take drinks.
No, you're not. It's
shh, don't tell anyone. I was just chilling back and just want to relax. So, it was fine. So, all right. But what did you think of your set?
Yeah, Let me just respond to one thing that you're always, whether it's a Mickey Moto exhibition or a Marijima gig, you're always saying, like, we only got two Macross songs, or we only got one Macross picture, or whatever. I tend not to expect too much of that. Maybe, you know, I'm not criticizing the way that you consume your popular culture or anything.
Yes, you are.
Indirectly, I am, I guess. But I approach it differently, because I think... it would be a Macross concert if it was mostly Macross stuff, and she never advertised it like that, so. And also, what's she gonna play? Like, Xiao Pai Long, really? You wanna listen to that? It's such an anime song.
Well, like I said, it depends on how much you're into the singer. If it's Fukuyama, I know, I'm familiar with most of his work a lot more. If it's Chie, I don't think Chie's done a song I don't like. With Mari, I find that I very much prefer her stuff from the 80s through to the early 90s at max. I'm not a huge fan of her mid-90s through to the last 20 years, to be honest.
This concert made me realize just how long ago the 90s was.
Right.
But anyway, okay, right, so let's get into it. So I talked about Tightrope. Actually, I barely did, because I don't remember that song. But anyway, so the next song was Leda. Leda is a really, really fantastic ethereal song, and I'm going to use that word already, but it's like really, really wispy, kind of fantasy-like song, and she did it on the piano, so it was a completely different experience. I really enjoyed this one. Then you had Koi wa Kimama ni... Then after that, you had a Kate Bush cover. So, there you go, Richard might enjoy that one. It was O England, My Lionheart. I think she played that at the Macross World concert too, did she not?
She may have. What is it with Kate Bush? I mean, even Chie, you know, Chie does Kate Bush covers.
It's interesting, isn't it? Anyway, the next one is Arion, which is from Sharp as a Knife, Sweet as Strawberries. I don't have that album, so I don't know this song. Arion, you know, nothing to do with the anime character.
I was just thinking that.
that's what you think of, right? And then You Don't Love Me Right Now. We're looking at the set list here, right? Because she put it up on Facebook, I think.
And they were very similar.
And it says, she's got the song titles and then the album titles in brackets next to it. So I thought it was kind of humorous that she wrote You Don't Love Me in brackets Right Now, whereas of course the song is just called You Don't Love Me and the album is called Right Now. You Don't Love Me Right Now is interesting, because Right Now was the album that came out in 2001. I was an exchange student here in Japan at the time, so I actually saw this in stores and I bought it off the shelves, probably the last Mari album that I saw on the store shelf and bought, or rather the last new one, because there were reissues since then. Right Now is interesting because it was made with band members from, do you guys remember the band Toto? Hold the line, do 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 do, love isn't always on time. So she loves Toto, and they worked with her on this album. So it's a okay. It's kind of a rocky, like AOR kind of album. And so to see this on piano is a completely different experience. I'm not sure if it completely works. It doesn't really give me the same feeling. But it's okay. I mean, you know, most of this is just interesting to hear different renditions of. Then she went into a couple of instrumentals, which are cool, because, you know, we have to remember that she's a pianist as well. Flying Leaves, Sayonara from these different movie soundtracks. And she says, you know, she did a lot of emceeing in between these songs. She said, you know, I really do want to work on more things like this, more soundtrack kind of stuff, more instrumental kind of stuff. But I don't get any work like that. I don't get any requests for this kind of stuff. So please give me some work. And that's it. And then she did this song called Churidu Churida. And have you heard this song? I mean, obviously you heard it there, but have you heard it before? I'd never heard it before.
I have heard it once before.
It came out on an EP a couple of years back. And I really like this song. Extent that I actually bought it straight away because they were selling it right outside. After the concert was done, I bought that, and I bought the Dancing with Minmay CD, and those to get signed. So that was cool. The next song was Anata no Hana ni Naritai, which is the B side of that single. Then we've got Watashitachi Ask Good Medicine, and then Sesiru no Amagasa. So let's talk about this for a second, because Sesiru no Amagasa, which is the parasol, the umbrella of Cecile, is one of her singles. What is really interesting about Mari Ijima's singles is that most of them are not written by her, whereas she makes a point of being a singer-songwriter and writes all her songs on her albums. As a result, it seems to me, I don't know who's making these decisions, but I think it's her. It seems to me that she is on purpose leaving out all the singles from her albums. So if you want to listen to the greatest hits of Mari Ijima, you'd better get the albums and the separate singles, or just listen to all the compilations that have been released over the years.
I mean, most of those singles, they don't exist on CD or anything, do they?
No, they're all on vinyl. Yeah, except for some of the later ones, but then they've all been deleted. I mean, they've all been out of print, right?
Right.
I don't know how many people still use the term deleted for that. Anyway, so Cecile Amagasa, obviously they just released Golden Best earlier this year, or was it last year? You know, Victor brought out a new compilation. So all of those singles are there now. You don't have to...
were they mostly on that album? Because I have that album.
Yeah, Cecile Amagasa. So, okay, one more thing about Cecile Amagasa. So she didn't write it. Who wrote it? It was Matsumoto Takashi. Who is Matsumoto Takashi, you might ask? Well, does a little song called Seikan Hiko ring a bell? Interstellar Flight by Ranka Lee, otherwise known as Megumi Nakajima, otherwise known as the new Minmay, the super-dimensional Cinderella. Yeah, he wrote that song too. In fact, he wrote most of Mari Ijima's actual hits, her singles. But he's never written a macro song. And you know that page of the the magazine cut that you like to tweet around and put on Facebook and put on Macro's World everywhere that you do.
The illustration?
No. The illustration and the entire article. I read the article, finally.
Okay.
And it's basically a huge interview with Cal Mori about the music of Macross. It's actually really enlightening. I was thinking of translating it, but I decided to do more Miyataka stuff just because it's more timely. So Cal Mori said that Seikan Hiko was basically Matsumoto Takashi's, "Oh, finally! They finally called me. I was wondering when you guys were going to call me to write a macro song. Goodness." That's basically what it was. So a bit of background. Matsumoto Takashi is one of the members of Happy End, which is a band from the 70s. Stop.
Okay.
Get your mind out of the gutter. Happy End is one of the most revolutionary bands that Japan has ever produced. It's my, you know, aside from Hummingbird, it's probably my favorite Japanese band ever. They do not sound anything like any other Japanese band. It's not J-pop. It's like straight folk rock all the way, except they're singing in Japanese. Whereas their contemporary bands were all like group sounds and stuff, so they were imitating the Beatles. You know, they even had similar names like the Tigers, the Spiders, the whatevers. You know, the Traveling Flower Band or the Flower Traveling Band or whatever. They all sang in English because they're, you know, to put it in a negative way, I mean, most of them were good, I guess. But to put it in a negative way, they were wannabes, right? They wanted to be like the rockabillies and stuff. Whereas Happy End went against the grain and said, no, we can make cool songs which you can rock to and they will be in Japanese. It's not impossible to mix the two. And they were fantastic. And, you know, they broke up, but they all of the members went off and did their own things. And Matsumoto Takashi ended up writing many idol songs. So for Mari Ijima, he wrote Cecile no Amagasa, he wrote Ichigram no Shiawase, which was, I think, not part of this particular concert, but it's, I mean, you know it. It's I'm not going to go on for 4 minutes.
Insert song here, yeah.
So he wrote that. He wrote, what else did he write? Anyway, he's been writing songs for lots of people the whole time, and I don't know, like Kawamori wasn't completely in charge of the music for the first Macro series anyway.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, so there you go, there's your Frontier link. If the Frontier fangirls had known that, would they have been pouring over through this? Is Boon to Mama.
New That's song. About the rabbit, right? Boon is supposed to be bunny.
Boon is
no?
bunny, right.
Yeah.
Boon and Mama. It's more like a jingle, right? It's like 30 seconds long. And
yeah, it was that one we got, because we didn't get the Amagasa song you were talking about before.
She's playing
the, but we did get Boon, and everyone knew it because everyone's followed the death of Bunny and the repercussions, like it was a national event among Mari's fans.
Well, here is where she talked about. Oh, wait, no, I forgot something. No, before we go on to that, still on Cecile, let me say one final thing. That if you listen to the lyrics of that song, it's like, you know, Cecile, she's. why did she ignore me? I passed her by on the street and she didn't take a look at me. Maybe it's because she's thinking of someone else or something like that. I don't remember. Mary has said that she has been asked so many times, what is this song about? What is the relationship between these characters that she's singing about? And she says, I don't know. I didn't write it. Maybe we should ask Matsumoto-san. He's the one who knows. In all these years, I never actually stopped to ask Matsumoto-san about these songs. So what's really funny is that, you know, like I said, most of her albums were all written and arranged and produced and, you know, composed by her. But her more famous songs were not. So when she's singing these songs, she said that she actually doesn't know, like, what kind of a mood to be in. You know, obviously she interprets it in her own way, but she doesn't really know what the correct mood for it is. Whereas with her songs, you know, she wrote them and she knows exactly, and they all relate to something that happened in her life in some way or another. Case in point, Bunto Mama, right? Which is where, you know, they're even after death, they're always going to be together. But Cecile and stuff like that, you know, they're just, I guess they're kind of just like chart songs to her. And this is relevant for the podcast because I kind of feel that's the way she thinks about most macro songs, with the exception of perhaps, you know, obviously An Angel's Paints because she wrote and composed that one. But Do You Remember Love? Because, I mean, I think that's so completely entrenched into who the Minmay character is. And
of course, Iki o Shiteru, because she wrote and composed that one as well.
Well, Friends Jiku o Koete, right? Okay, but not including those ones. I mean, like, from the classic macro songs. And the other thing about Do You Remember Love is that if we go into who wrote that, right? It's Kato... Kato Kazuhiko.
Mm-hmm.
Who was the guy from the Sadistic Mika band.
Oh, okay. Now you're getting some references I actually know. Okay,
Sadistic Mika band. And was he the lyricist or was he the composer? I don't know. Because the composer who was either the lyricist or the composer was his wife. Who was
she
Kazuko...
sadistic as well?
Sorry?
Was she sadistic as well?
She died of leukemia, man.
Oh, wow.
Like, I don't want to say too soon or anything, but it's funny that you should say, was she sadistic as well? Because as we know, or at least as some of us know, Kato himself committed suicide on the day of the 30th anniversary. Not the 30th, the other crossover live that they held before. The one I didn't go to.
Yeah.
On the second day that she was supposed to... Or the first day, actually.
Yeah. Well, the first day was when they kept it from her.
Yes. And the second day...
And then it all came out on the second day, and she talked for a long time, which she had every right to. It was a very emotional and personal moment, considering it was a huge stadium full
exactly.
of people.
Right, my point is that these songs, you know, I don't want to say they don't mean so much to her. I want to really find some other way of saying it, but, like, they mean completely different things to her than her personal songs, with the exception, probably, of, like I'm saying, Do You Remember Love? Because right. there's so much, you know, not just because of the suicide or because of the death of his wife as well. Kato Kazuhiko... was part of a band called the Folk Crusaders. You know that band, right? The Folk Crusaders were the namesake of the Beat Crusaders, who did the soundtrack for Beck.
For Beck.
Okay. Let's go back. The Folk Crusaders, they had a huge, huge hit single with... they're from the 70s, right? They had a huge single with... Kaitekita yopparai, which literally means the three drunk guys came back. That's how you translate it. But the actual English title is You Only Live Twice. Which is so weird, isn't it? The song is about three guys who were drunk and they died and they went up to heaven and they started asking all these weird questions and they were really annoying that God decided that he had enough of them and sent them back down to earth to live again because he doesn't want them hanging around.
Okay.
So that's Kazuhiko. And the reason I'm telling you this is because that was Mari Ijima's first ever single that she bought on vinyl.
Oh.
So she's got this connection to this guy. And then, you know, obviously it wasn't like when she chose Sakamoto Ryuichi to do her album. Victor chose him to write, or Victor and rather, you know, all the macro stuff. And Ishiguro as well. They chose him to write Do You Remember Love because they wanted, you know, this kind of song. But obviously, when she had to sing that song, it was kind of a moment of fate, and it's very, very, you know, interesting, and you know, sometimes tragic and sometimes wonderful that she's always doing these songs, and so it was super, super emotionally charged song for many, many ways. Even if you don't think about it being the song that saved mankind in the year 2010, right, in the fictional world. Yeah, that kind of stuff, you know, is really fantastic to me. And when I'm, you know, that's what I'm trying to say when I approach this concert from a different angle than you do.
Right.
Because I'm seeing all this being played out in front of me when she's performing all these songs. But anyway, so Buntum Mama.
And then, okay.
And then the Eternal Forest from her more recent album. Not the latest one, though.
Right.
And then after this, she said, now I'm going to play three songs that I know you all love. And she broke into No Limit, which was, you know, you already talked about.
How old is No Limit?
It's from 1999 or 2000. 99, I think. I remember it very vividly, actually, because, you know, I have a story about this. It's kind of personal. I don't know. So cheesy. Like, I was in university, and I actually broke up with my girlfriend at the time.
Okay.
And this song came in. This CD came in the mail, directly from Los Angeles, and it had a Snoopy stamp on it. Because when she sends it from her PO box or something, I don't know. It's they put a Snoopy stamp on it. It's like hers. She loves Snoopy. And there's some handwritten stuff there. So I'm like, this is Mari Ijima's handwriting, man. Like, totally fanboying out. And I play it. And like, No Limit, it's such a positive song.
It is. Very Genki, very poppy.
Super Genki, super poppy.
Jump up and down.
Yeah. Really uplifting message. It's all in English. Yeah, like, I got better. You know, it wasn't like the love of my life or whatever. Like, I was, 18 or something? Like, I was just, like, sort of depressed, you know? It wasn't like my world was crumbling apart or anything. But, you know, I heard this and I felt better. Like, I didn't... It was okay.
Told Mari this story?
No, I've never. I don't know. Actually, I'm not sure.
Next time you see her, maybe you should.
I don't know. Here's the thing. Mari and I actually talked quite a lot. We back in the late 2000, like 2006 or something. She let me in her recording studio. She let me into like her house where she recorded where she composed all her stuff. Oh, by the way, there's Minmay cells framed in her living room. you know, there's so many rumors going. Like, the elephant in the room, okay, is that you know, she doesn't like macros, she hates macros fans, blah, 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 and she hates Min Mei with a passion, and she wishes it never happened. Like, she has, to put a very bad spin on it, she has mood swings. Okay, let's say that. There are times when she doesn't like it, but she does feel very, very grateful for having had that as the big break, and she does really appreciate the character of Min Mei, and she does appreciate being like the soul and the voice, not just the voice, but the spirit of Min Mei, if you will. And she's voiced that many times, and so when you look around her room, you know, there's posters of like her concerts and stuff. They're all behind glass and stuff, and there's Min Mei cells there, and there's Min Mei posters, and there's even a Min Mei figure in amongst
now,
all the other stuff.
Now, let's point out here that you know this because you did actually visit her at one point to film, was it a documentary?
Yes.
Which was then never released.
That's not exactly true. It's a documentary that I made for sociological purposes. It's actually about her and Casey Rankin. Casey Rankin, in case you don't know, is the guy from the band Shogun. They did the opening theme for Detective Story with Matsuda Yusaku, and a little show called Orgus, Super Dimension Century Orgus.
Never
he's
heard
the
of
guy that. Who sings, "Where are you going? When are you coming home?" And Gypsy! La 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 la. He is a wonderful human being, or rather was, unfortunately. He passed away a couple of years after I finished that documentary. The idea was that since he was an American who had come to Japan to start a new life and to continue his music career here, completely relocate and start a new life, I thought that would be a good juxtaposition to what Mari did, which was exactly the opposite.
Right.
And I found really, really intriguing similarities in what they said, with regards to their family, their children. Like, you know, "I'd rather they not be musicians" was something that both of them said.
And yet, in Mari's case, her sons did become musicians.
In Casey Rankin's case, Eric Zay is a really, famous. Like, what's famous in Japan? He's famous amongst the circles that know about rock music. Anyway, so the point was that I found these two people have such intriguing backstories that people have never told, because, you know, their main work is musicians, and their backstories would be some PR piece, you know? And neither of them are signed on to record companies, so there's no one who's going to do all that stuff anymore. So I wanted to just take a look at them as human beings who are artists, who choose their own paths to live by. And I thought I did okay. It wasn't released because it wasn't... Okay, well, I showed it in symposium and stuff like that. I showed it in classrooms. I showed it in seminars. I thought about booking out a theater in Nipponbashi, in Osaka, when I lived in Kyoto. I went through all that information and stuff. But, I don't know. It never really felt right. And it's only really recently that I've been thinking about asking Mari if I could maybe show it somewhere. But, you know, maybe later.
Well, I know I've seen, I think, the bulk of it, and I thought it was really good.
I think that there's a lot of stuff on there that...
it's very personal?
Yeah. There's sides that don't lend themselves well to someone who's trying to really sell their image. You know, a performer's image is part of their performance, right? It's not just the recorded material. And so when you talk about like disagreements and stuff like that, creative disagreements or life struggles or whatever, There's going to be sides that people don't want you to show. And in fact, you know, I was told to change a lot of stuff, and I did change a lot of stuff. But then at that point, it stops being, you know, the academic sides of it starts to suffer a lot. Mm. And I didn't want to make a PR movie, because that's the reason why we don't involve companies in this. So what it ended up being was a very candid look into how these people live and work. But in a way, kind of warts and all, you know? So
right.
So well, I don't know, yeah, maybe someday.
To tie that back to what you were saying, in that Mari does have a sense of connection to Minmay. She does have Minmay stuff at her house.
She also has Terminator stuff at her house.
Well,
it's a
like you said, mood swings,
Terminator right? toy right there on the mantelpiece.
I guess my point is there's this common zeitgeist, I guess, of people thinking she's a bit William Shatner-ish.
Yeah, like all I did was put a photograph of my two autographed CDs that I talked to you about just now on Facebook, and then I got this barrage of comments saying, "Oh, she was on a good, in a good mood that day, or something." I don't even remember what it was, but it like completely sidetracked the thing. All I did was just post a photograph, and people don't talk about the music or talk about the CDs or talk about anything other than this whole like drama queen thing that,
right?
That is not unfounded. Let's face it, but I mean,
she has had her outbursts.
Look at the material first.
Hmm.
People saying all this stuff are the people who want her to perform only Xiao Bai Long, right? And like, screw that. That's not what it's right. about.
I think it's also fair to say it depends on where and when she's performing. What people don't seem to realize is, you know, in the US,
yeah,
if she's playing at Macross Worldcon, she will do mostly, not all, but mostly Minmay songs. And you can get any Minmay stuff or Macross stuff you want autographed. That's not how it works in Japan, as we've just discussed. You know, if you're after Macross songs, well, you know, you have to sit through everything else. Not to say that that's bad, but if you are there for Macross songs, you're only getting a couple. And then you can't get just anything signed. It has to be merchandise that you've bought at the gig on the day, and they aren't selling Macross stuff there. So you have to, well, Japanese fans, if they're fans of Macross as opposed to fans of just Mari, kind of get screwed when it comes to getting autographs and things like that. The US has it way easier.
Yeah, you weren't even allowed to take photographs
right
with her, whereas in the US, in Macross Worldcon, yeah, everybody, yeah, it's like it, I mean, that's you people should be really, really grateful for being so lucky to have such a close experience with the artist. It doesn't happen over here at all.
Not here, no. So shall we bring this back to
a close? So yeah, okay. So triple encore, man. So like basically, this was the end of the first, the end of the main concert, right? No Limit, we just talked about that. Then Tenshi no Enogu, Angels Paints. This was fantastic. As we mentioned, the show, the location, the actual concert hall, was you know, meant for classical stuff, piano recitals and stuff like that. So it was a very, very classy atmosphere. You know, the lighting was fantastic during this song, because did you notice those back lights?
They started
lighting up in the colors of the rainbow. So
like, right, they had these pieces of clear plastic or plexiglass running up the back of the hall, which they could then pass light through in different colors, and you'd get the double effect of both the light and or any color. And they played with the way shadow worked off the angles of these pieces of plastic. Yeah. It was really striking, and I honestly don't remember them doing much with that the last time I saw her at this venue about 4 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, well, they probably thought... When I say they, I mean, it's her, isn't it? Like, she basically produced the whole show.
Right, yeah. I guess she's more familiar with the facilities
the location,
now.
Yeah. So this was really, really moving for me. Like, Tenshi no Enogu, it's the original BGM, it's not any other weird version, it's the actual one. Great performance. I was actually kind of moved, which is a hard thing to do. I was like, wow, this is She's Mimi, you know, just for these mm-hmm. couple of songs. And then the next one is the big one, Do You Remember Love? You know, that ended to thunderous applause, literally a standing ovation.
Right.
Well, the last three songs, everyone was standing, like you said. But that's because she said everyone stand up. You know, so standing, clapping, jumping. It was.
We had a few girls break out, or a few people, I guess, break out glow sticks.
Yeah, yeah, we had a guy with glow stick. A guy. Then she went back in. You know, that was at the end, and people were clapping for a while. She didn't come out for a good 5 minutes. My hands started hurting.
See, I don't do that, especially if I'm at a venue with a seat. I just sit, close my eyes, and just let the chant roll over me. It's kind of like meditation in a pachinko parlor, but without the cigarette smoke.
Okay. Well, that's not very participatory of you. Okay, well, then we got the first encore. And to me, this was the highlight of the show. I don't know what you thought about this, but we have to talk about Odeko ni Kiss, which is a kiss on the forehead. She didn't sing. They just played the track from her album, but she came out and did a ballet performance, a choreographed to this song. And she looked, well, let's say, she was wearing this blue dress for the whole of the concert prior to this. It's kind of classy. And she kept saying, don't look at my boobs, don't look at my boobs. Because, you know, it's kind of an open front, almost. She came out for this encore in a completely different thing. You know, she had a tight... it's kind of a leotard top on, and a short red skirt, kind of fluffy skirt, you know. And she had this headband, so her hair was all tied back, and she had, kind of had. It's one of these newish headbands, the ones that make the girls look like they've got bunny ears. So I'm sure that she was she was conscious of that. Now. While she was doing this ballet, I don't know what you thought, she looked identical to her debut self. I mean, she looked like a 20-year-old. Maybe I wasn't seeing what you were seeing, but it was an incredible transformation. Kanzen Henke, perfect transformation. There you go. No parts forming here.
Well, you may notice I'm silent.
I know. What row were you on?
This is not the first time she's done ballet at a gig.
Okay.
Because she picked it back up a few years back, and this was a lot better, better rehearsed, better performed, much more mature than the last time she did it.
Mature in what way? Refined, actually?
More refined, I guess, yeah. It felt, you may be saying that it looked visually like she'd reverted. I felt she moved in a refined manner. She picked up ballet again, even though she used to do it when she was really young. And actually, during this trip to Tokyo, she found an album at her parents' house with some pictures of her doing ballet as a child and took them back to the US with her, and she just posted them today, actually.
Yes. Well, she does ballet in like her music videos. As well. So, like, even after her debut, she was doing it. It wasn't like she...
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think there was quite a few years there where she went on hiatus. Then she got this teacher, and she started picking it up again.
Yeah.
And I think she's improved a lot. She was maybe not quite back into the swing of it last time I saw her. And last time she was wearing a much more, how shall I put, colourful, garish, and maybe ill-fitting leotard kind of outfit. This time, like you said, it was refined a little more.
Yeah.
It wasn't bad. I felt it was a bit out of place. But I mean, she wanted to do it and she did it. It wasn't too long. It was a perfect length. It was done well. I was just not what I was there for.
Okay. I'm probably coming from a completely different background than you are, and that's why I saw it differently. But she looked, I mean, physically, she looked like even, especially her face. Well, not especially good. Like, what is this? There's no positive way of saying it. Like, she looked like the way she does in the music videos when she's dancing. I was beside myself. You know? It was quite quite breathtaking, I think. Her performance was choreographed by her ballet teacher. Afterwards, she wrote this up. She explained that she was thinking of not having a ballet performance. I can't remember the reason why. I think because she hadn't practiced in a long time or something. Then a voice came to her and told her to do it to this song. It's Odeka no Kiss, which is the final song from the Rosé album, which you should listen to. And I'm sure you've listened to by now, because this podcast has suddenly gone by long enough. This song, right, is a very, very, very girlish kind of a almost like childish song. Like, even the theme, like Kiss on the Forehead, you know, kind of like...
Yeah, kissing a kid on
the forehead. Like a child.
Parent kissing a kid on the forehead before they go to sleep or something.
Yeah, you listen to it and it sounds like a very, very kiddie kind of thing, but there's a lot of innocence there. And so her concept for the song, for the dance, sorry, was that she should be like a puppet in a way, that she would move around like she was on strings or something like that. Almost like a marionette. And so her ballet instructor or coordinator or whatever, choreographer, constructed the sequence for her. I think it was done really, really well. Not really much else I can say about that, other than this is the Mari Ijima of 1982, just made her debut. That's really what I was thinking when I... It really felt like I had been in a time machine. It was really bizarre. Maybe I was sitting too far at the back, but I wasn't. I was...
No, we had similar seats.
Yeah.
It was a good seat.
It was a really good seat. Right
close
in the middle.
To the center, yeah. 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 Probably the best seat I've had at a Mari gig, because those hardcore supporters do snap up the front rows.
Yeah. The only thing that I regretted was that I wasn't able to see her feet, because I had heads in front of me. But then she posted up a video of it on YouTube, and I saw them, so that's cool.
Right. Right.
Anyway, right, moving on. Himitsu no Tobira. From Rosé again. So
right,
she went
right.
back to the piano and did Himitsu no Tobira. This, not really much to say about this song. It's one of the ones that's on the first album. Listen to it. It's a good song. Fair enough. Second encore was Birthday. That's a good song as well. Marin. It's very strange. Marin is like her nickname.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like she wrote a song about herself. Right? This is the second song from the first album. So it's almost like she's introducing herself. You know? And this was the perfect ending song. Again, because we've just seen her, or at least I have just seen her as she was in 1982. On the day of her debut, or is it 83? I think her debut was 83. The actual music debut. And so having her sing this song, and this was a new arrangement, by the way. She wasn't playing the BGM from the album. It's a different arrangement. But everyone knew the lyrics, and everyone was singing along. And of course, she was telling them to. And it's like the perfect way to say goodbye, because the lyrics are "Itsu made mo issho sa Marin." It's just very, very simple. Always, we'll always
it's
be together.
It's almost like she's an anime character, basically.
Yeah, we'll always be together. I'll always be here, Marin. I am Marin.
Come on.
that's like her going off into the sunset, you know, and she'll be back. Mm-hmm. You know, she's taking care of her fans. I don't know. I just found that like very, very charming. It was the perfect ending. It was a really good show. I walked out with feeling very, very fulfilled, very, very satisfied. There were really no too many low points. Let's face it, her voice isn't what it used to be. Making some of those different Warbles? Renditions, yeah, kind of difficult to get used to, I guess. But just the feeling of the performance, like the atmosphere, it was all far better than I expected, and I didn't experience that in Macross World convention.
That was, you know, a very different atmosphere,
exactly,
as well.
So
you didn't really have people singing along or jumping up and down or anything either.
No. Well, I walk out, and of course, you know, Shiro Sasaki is there in the corner, and I'm like, "Hey, dude!" He's like, "Who the hell are you?" I'm like, "Okay, fine."
So then you got in line for autographs, right?
Yeah, and then I heard that story that I told you, and so I think that's it.
Right. Okay.
Oh, well, and then I spoke to her, of course, you know, and she recognized me immediately, because, I mean, it's not like we hadn't seen, we saw each other last year, and then she asked right. me, so you, oh, but she did actually point out to everyone in the line, and everyone that was selling, like all her staff that was selling her t-shirts and her CDs, "This is the guy that made my movie! He made my movie!" And I'm like, and
you're thinking in your head, "This is Mari of 1982.
Yeah. Not anymore, it wasn't. I didn't know that you weren't allowed to take photographs, so I said, "Can we take a photo?" And you know what? She was like, "Well, you know, for you, I guess I'll make an exception." And there was some guy at the back who was like, and she was like, "No, okay, no, okay, I'm sorry. I guess no. Maybe later. Maybe I guess you're going home." And I'm like, "What the hell? What do you mean maybe later?" And she goes, are you going to the second show?" "Well, I wasn't planning to. What do you mean we're going to have time for a photo later on?" And she's like, maybe next time. Maybe this time." So, like, I walked out going, "What the hell was that about?"
Again, something fans at Macross WorldCon should be really thankful
for.
Everyone gets pictures with Mari, you know.
Yeah, no, well, we mentioned that, yeah. So, you know, that's how difficult it is, that's how rare it is. She was like, I really want to, but, you know, everyone, then we'd have to do it for everyone else as well.
Right. Yeah,
so that's that.
Which is the crux of the issue, really.
Yeah, yeah.
So, the other topic, which we will now be pushing to the next podcast, because I referred to it just so people know, we were both on separate days, went down to Takarazuka near Osaka to see the Henke, which is the Shoji Kawamori.
I love how you're not calling it Hyogo anymore. What happened?
Well, I'm trying to keep the peace.
All right.
You know. Yes, so that's a long story, including me getting a private tour of the exhibit by Kawamori himself, me and 19 other lucky people. So I have a lot of notes, and we will dedicate the next podcast to that. So until we do sit down and record that Kawamori chat, this is Macross Speaker Podcast, or in today's case, Mari Ijima Podcast, folding out.
No Limit Cast.